This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast, which offers education and training for football referees of all levels. You can now listen to our weekly podcast every Friday from 5pm by subscribing to the website refereesworld.co.uk and then go and search your podcast provider, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever. Right, we also have a YouTube channel. Just do a search for the Referees World podcast. You can subscribe to that because over the coming months, we're going to be adding a few cheeky little training videos. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA. And this is PGMLO Observer. God, here we go, Rich. It only happens when you're in my presence. We've been doing this stuff online for months. You arrive and all goes wrong.
Yeah, it's the second time I've been in the studio. I've got to say, since the last time, do you like my haircut?
I do, mate. You're looking very dapper.
Thank
and you don't have to make an effort like that just for me.
Put a bit of slap on.
There you go. So, as I was saying, my colleague is Rich Mellon. He is a PGMOL observer and the Southwest Pool Observer Coordinator. He is Richard Mellon. Last time we saw each other, mate, was in your kitchen.
It was.
And that worked okay, yeah, didn't it?
It didn't come out too bad.
No. Right, let's crack straight on with our guest because this is going to be a slightly longer version of the podcast than normal because our guest has been a difficult man to track down, but it's great to get him.
Yes.
In summary, Alan Snoddy.
We finally got Alan Snoddy to come on the Referees World podcast because it became available. Amongst all the other many, many things he does, as well as playing golf, before I drop that one in there because I know he's listening. Alan been to two World Cups as a match official in 86 and 1990. Has become a experienced referee instructor for FIFA. So there's lots to learn and, you know, we just didn't have enough time.
He's one of these characters that's been there, he's seen it and he's done it.
And he's got a t-shirt that I want.
Brilliant. So let's find out a little bit more about Alan Snoddy. Alan, welcome to the Referees World podcast.
It's much appreciated and looking forward to this.
Excellent. Well, look, let's start at the very beginning. Let's first of all start with your refereeing career, your refereeing background.
Yeah, well, I suppose it all started when I was 16 years of age and decided to become a football referee. I think I knew at that stage that I wasn't going to be a top player playing at the top level. I love football. I remember watching a game and thinking to myself I could referee that game much better than the guy in the middle. Maybe a little bit cheeky off me at the time, but I just thought I would give it a go. So I attended the normal course and took up the whistle, and the rest is history, as they say. So the frightening thing about it is that it's coming up to 50 years in January 2022 when I refereed my first game of football. So things developed for me during the career. I spent 5 years at what we would call junior level in Northern Ireland, 2 years later at 25 on the FIFA list, where I spent 20 years, the two World Cup final tournaments in Mexico 86 and Italy 1990, obviously the highlights, but many, many international games, obviously over that amount of time. So when I gave up the whistle at 48, I became a domestic observer, then a UEFA observer, and in time then the FIFA and UEFA instructor, and working at the UEFA Centre of Referee Excellence at NEON with young, talented referees, part of the UEFA Convention panel as well, with various projects in countries that I'm responsible for. So it's been a lifetime. It's been a fantastic journey. Many highlights, of course, the odd dip as well when things don't go according to plan, but that's the life of a referee, and we have to learn from our experiences.
And that's what Rich and I talk about on a regular basis, really, is learning from your experiences, going back to basics. And this is where you improve your skills as a referee at any level, isn't it?
Of course it is. And back to basics is something that's actually very, very important because, you know, it's only the very, very top of the pyramid or the pinnacle that they use all these expensive toys from VAR, radio communication systems. I can even remember going back to the days when we were given the flags that beep, and there was a lot of excitement about this new toy that we'd been given. But there's nothing wrong with just going back to basics at all. And indeed, 99% of referee coaching and referee education now will still be the old basic refereeing that we've all been used to.
Alan, can I ask you your thoughts and opinions on the new technologies that we're now using in refereeing compared to the good old days of raw, hardcore football in the sort of 70s and 80s?
Well, there is a place for VAR, and VAR is here to stay. There's no question of that. I think when it becomes complicated is still, you know, the way I try and explain it to people is it's still human beings that are operating the VAR system. So these the VAR, the AVAR, have to be at the same level as the referee. You know, some people think this can be just come into a room, sit down, have a coffee and watch a few television screens. And anybody listening that's been involved in VAR will know that that's very, very far from the truth. This is a mentally tiring experience. This is a concentration experience. But the important thing is that, you know, unless they see something completely different from what the referee has seen on the field of play, then there is no need to be involved. And I think this is the bit that maybe just needs to be improved from my experiences of watching matches with VAR that have been involved, and being involved myself a little bit with leagues that have had VAR in operation. So it's learning from experience, as we've already said, and continually trying to improve how it works. Of course, radio communication systems also help, where assistant referees, fourth officials, in the old days of additional assistant referees, the communication amongst the referee team, the match officials on the field of play then was very, very important and helped control the game.
Interesting thoughts on that. Can I ask you one more question with regards to the current technologies before I hand you over to Rich? You've highlighted the pros, the cons about the likes of VAR and the comms. The conversation that we've been having recently is about whether or not referees should be wearing cameras, as in ref cam. What are your thoughts on that moving forward?
It's not something that I would have thought about, to be honest. I think referees now are carrying enough technology, enough equipment without adding to a ref camera. And, you know, I know in refereeing we talk about selective listening, we talk perhaps about selective seeing. You know, if the ref cam was picking up, which it would do, more things than the referee would, then does that simply add to the problems? You know, when you consider the equipment that's carried, even the vanishing spray, the equipment for the beep systems, the headsets, do we really want to add anything else to the referee? And it becomes a little more ridiculous. You know, there are four pairs of eyes in a football match at top level, with the two assistant referees and the fourth official, and a VAR is there also. Got what the match officials haven't seen. Then my own personal opinion would be I wouldn't be an advocate of a ref cam.
Alan, I'm going to push over in the direction of Rich Mellin now. Thank you for answering those questions.
Yeah,
no problem.
Hi, Al. My interest as regards what we're going to have a chat about is we're very, very close in age, so we both sort of have the same sort of background as regards growing up with the game. My question to you is, me personally, having never been to a major tournament as a match official, but you have, is to start there. What was your feeling about going to the World Cup? And ultimately, what is your most memorable World Cup experience?
When I was appointed to Mexico in 1986, it came as a complete shock, because there was no way that I was ever thinking that I was going to be in the running for a World Cup final tournament at 31 years of age, which is what I was then. So it took me obviously a lot by surprise. Now, when you compare the preparation that goes into the World Cup tournaments now and the World Cup tournaments back then, it's night and day, because we were simply left to make our own preparations. And obviously the altitude in Mexico was something that was a concern before arrival, when I got there, when we got there. So the preparation was simply left to us. And obviously I stepped up the physical training because I wanted to be as obviously as fit as possible. The other unusual thing back then was that we also had to act as assistant referees or linesmen, as the case was in 86 and also in 1990, which was the last time that the referees acted as linesmen. So it was important to keep the eye in with the flag. So I took some appointments as a linesman domestically before I travelled there. But the whole build up to the tournament, the preparation is completely different than in modern day refereeing, and quite rightly so. So I guess in hindsight, it was a bit of a blur.
No. It's nice to have those photos that you can look at online, but. As the listeners are going to do straight away when they realise Alan Snoddy went to the 1986, I've got to ask you the question, Al. Did you do England-Argentina game by chance?
No, not England-Argentina.
I had to put that question up there very early rather than being sort of upon.
Okay.
You know, they're still...
So the show can continue.
Yeah, they're still dining out on that decision, many people.
I know.
Okay.
I was in the stadium when that happened, actually, so that was as close as I got to it. And to be honest, in the stadium... At the time, there was not the same furore, if you like, when the incident happened, because I think most people in the stadium didn't see it.
Yeah.
In fact, most people didn't see it, yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can understand that totally. So let's just touch on the thing that you had to cover, assistant referee role as well as referee's role. Where would you put your preference as regards being a match official in that time?
To be honest, the answer... to the question is very simple. To receive an appointment for a match in a World Cup final tournament was probably the priority. So I refereed one game between Portugal and Morocco, which was actually played at the same time as England played Poland. And then I was appointed as a linesman four times. I think I had two appointments before the referee appointment and two appointments after it. So I actually got as far as the quarterfinal as a linesman with the match between Germany and the host nation, Mexico. So I think my mentality was, you know, an appointment is an appointment, and it doesn't matter whether you're an assistant referee or a referee. You're at a World Cup final tournament, and, you know, that was the most important thing. And, of course, appointments were outside our control, so you absolutely accepted with both open arms, anything that you were given.
Yeah, good answer. I mean, accepting the fact that you were out there at a World Cup tournament, it made no difference what you were doing, so long as you were involved. That was the big thing. And
absolutely.
Like I say, we can only applaud the fact that you actually attended two World Cup tournaments and not just the one. That's testament to what you were capable of doing as a match official. So you came to the end of your career. How many years refereeing active?
32 years active, and 20 as an international and 25 as a top league domestic referee in Northern Ireland. So I guess a long time.
Okay. How did you, after your active career, how did you become a FIFA consultant on refereeing matters?
Well, it was probably small steps. So the first decision that I had to make was when was the right time to retire. And I think I got that right, because I refereed three more years in domestic football after I stopped as a FIFA and a UEFA referee. You know, you can't go on forever, and I think it's important not to try and force another year out and another year out, and then mistakes happen and fitness levels drop and injuries creep in a little bit more. So first step after that then was becoming a domestic observer, then a UEFA observer, and then step by step got more into the instruction role with FIFA and UEFA, who appointed.
The fact that you got to the stage of becoming a tutor instructor, did you have to go on specific courses to become the FIFA tutor that you now are?
Yeah. You go. They have an annual course where they bring all the instructors together, and you go through the material and deliver short presentations, things that, you know, you would do lower down the scale as well, just to develop your skills and have your peers watch you and give. And feedback comments as well. So yeah, it's not a pass-fail situation. It's not a strenuous situation. But I think probably the reality is you wouldn't be at that level of the game unless you had the sort of capabilities to pass on your knowledge, pass on knowledge and facilitate discussion and cause debate and try and improve refereeing, because there's no point in having a seminar or a workshop or some sort of educational session unless things improve after that.
Yeah, you mentioned about educating and helping referees develop and that. What's been the biggest project that you've actually carried out during your time as an instructor?
Oh, very interesting question. I think, I'm not sure if it's the biggest, but it's maybe something that might come close to answering the question. When Kosovo and Gibraltar were given permission to come into FIFA and UEFA, obviously they had no experience of international refereeing. So they had no international referees, they had no instructors who had really worked at that level. So on behalf of UEFA, I took responsibility within the UEFA Referee Convention to try and guide them in the right way, let's say. So part of that job was obviously going on a regular basis to both countries to set up their refereeing structures and follow up and hold seminars for referees, for referee observers and referee instructors, because it's okay holding seminars for referees, but if the instructors and the observers don't have the same knowledge, then they can't improve their own referees in their own countries. So to some degree, those projects are still a little bit ongoing. The hard work has been done. They have the structures in place. It was quite rewarding also to see every time you went back improvements in both countries. So that was a project that was extremely enjoyable and rewarding.
That's good. The thing that comes to mind is here we are in the UK, but do you see a common theme wherever you go in football as regards development and the help that's required?
Yes. that's you know, the answer to that question, Rich, is and I can explain to you. I was doing a seminar for FIFA in Bangladesh. For whatever reason, at one point during the seminar, it suddenly dawned on me, it suddenly hit me, you know, this conversation or debate about refereeing could be happening in any seminar room in the world, because the discussion is exactly the same anywhere you go. It doesn't vary from country to country. It doesn't vary from continent to continent. If you show a clip and you ask people to discuss it, the discussion is exactly the same. So we talk about the referee family quite a lot, but it is worldwide. And that moment, it was a moment that I actually never forgotten. And I think it's the perfect answer to your question. It doesn't matter where you are, the discussion is the same, and we're all in the same we're all in the same boat. We're all learning the same things.
My thought has been throughout the years that I've been doing it, football's an international language, just used with a different accent and a different communication style. But it still wants the same outcome. I find that's the challenge for all referees. Wherever we are listening to this podcast, we're all the same in terms of what we're trying to deliver. And it's the delivery that we're trying to satisfy the demands.
Just touching back on the training procedures that you've been through over the years, what is the most common thing that you find yourself drilling into referees on a regular basis?
I think a lot of it is common sense. Is take the simple decision, keep it simple. Women refereeing. I use a phrase quite often: stay under the radar. You know, don't be the only person in the stadium to think it's a penalty kick, because you're probably going to be wrong. It's little things like take your time, give yourself a moment just to think it through, watch the reaction of the players. It's better to be slightly late and get it correct rather than too fast and get it wrong. But, you know, these are things that only come with experience, and these are not things that can be taught to somebody that's in the early stages of their career. So again, it's going back to just learning from experience. But, you know, give the decision that everybody expects.
Alan, I'd like to ask you about your thoughts on now seeing women take control of a game and how good it is to see that.
Yeah, no, it's marvellous to see it, and it's a really fresh approach and something that absolutely must be welcomed. You know, and it's something that's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And you know, I know in England obviously a Premier League has had female assistant for quite some time. We know Stephanie Frappara at UEFA level has refereed at a very top level. I think, you know, if you see, you'll probably be watching little bits and pieces of news from throughout Europe.
How far away do you see a lady refereeing the World Cup final?
A male World Cup final?
Yeah.
I don't want the answer to sound wrong, but I genuinely don't think that's something that we will ever see. I think, and it's not said for any sexist reasons or any reasons like that, but if you have the Women's World Cup, will there be male referees refereeing in the Women's World Cup? And again, I think the answer to that is no, because the Women's World Cup should be refereed by female referees. So it's a matter of striking the balance somewhere along that. I know for sure that there will be females involved in the male World Cup. So I know it's sounds a little bit complicated, but I think I'm only being realistic and honest.
Right. I think we're going to change direction here in terms of what we've been talking about, because whilst it's hugely interesting, we've only got a few minutes left now before we call it a session and put this one in the can. Looking at future projects, anything in the pipeline after we see this lockdown and restrictions removed?
There's nothing specific in the pipeline at the moment, except we all want to get back into the seminar room or the classroom and off Zoom calls. That's for sure. Whilst there's a place for Zoom calls and short seminars, I think those will probably continue in the future. But in terms of projects down the line, it's getting back in front of people in a classroom setup and on the field of play.
Before we go, Alan, first of all, I'd just like to say thank you so much for giving us the benefit of your experience and your time as well. What you've said is invaluable for people that are just joining the podcast for the first time. What single tip could you give to new referees?
Starting off would be, you know, work hard. Fitness is so important now at, mm-hmm. at level of refereeing. If you're not fit, if your body composition doesn't look like an athlete, then you need to do something about that. Otherwise, the step-by-step promotion process isn't going to happen. And these days, you know, referees look like athletes. They look like the players. So that would be my tip, and work extremely hard.
Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for your time today.
No, pleasure, and thanks for the invitation, guys, and every success.
Wow, what an honour, really, Rich, to have somebody of the calibre of Alan Snoddy on the podcast.
I could have kept talking to Alan for hours, because I think we all have that little boy thing in us about wanting to play football, wanting to do football, you know, and as Alan said, we are ex-footballers to some extent, because we couldn't achieve the status we wanted, but we became referees in our own way. And like I say, what a wonderful career.
He's the sort of character, and you can just tell that through his charismatic, deep, rich Irish voice, that you just want to sit down in a room with a couple of beers with and just grind out as much information as possible from him. And he'll have a story and an answer for everything.
I think I'd sit down and have probably a nice pint of Guinness with Alan.
Mm.
That's a dead set.
Definitely. Alan, absolute pleasure. And thanks very much for taking time out, as we've said. Now, we're always looking for guests and ideas to enhance the Referees World podcast. And if you have any suggestions, anything you'd like us to discuss openly, we can do that. Just get in touch through the website, where you can obviously subscribe to listen at refereesworld.co.uk.
The download is complete.
This is Referees World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.